kendim sana bir verdilik yakın
Okay. Thank you for giving me 3 minutes there for me to woof down my delicious fast food breakfast burrito. Hi, my name is Ren. This is the Mideast Madness Show, the weekend edition. Again, for Saturday, August 31st, the ultimate day of August 2013. And it's 11:04 a.m., so you're listening live to me. And so you may talk with me directly by calling into the studio, area code 831-427-3772. That's 427-3772. Line number two is 469-3119. 469-3119. Clearing my throat here, trying to clear it with a little hot coffee. Yes, fast food coffee. This is the Mideast Madness Show for the last Saturday in August 2013. Folks, I am going to do a little plug here for FRSC now, and I know how my little plugs often stretch out to be not so little. Okay, according to the Shoutcast Administrator, which is a program device we use to determine how many people are listening to us at any given moment, there are a total of two listeners, two internet outlets out there. And of course, since we currently do not have a broadcasting transmitter, no one is hearing us on the regular radio dial. We hope to return to 101.3 FM. But when we do return, it'll be somewhere on the dial that hopefully somehow people will find out about. Now, because there are only two listeners, and I know who one of them are, it is absolutely critical that you spread the word. Free Radio Santa Cruz is not dead. We haven't gone away. We've just gone away from the airwaves for now. As per the norm, we are streaming live around the world to anyone who has access to the World Wide Web. The two of you out there, I beg you, do what you can to keep the word going that FRSC is still afloat. We're still actually looking for a plot of land to plop the antenna down, the transmitter down upon, so we can act like a normal, regular radio station again. We lost the last plot of land because that land came under foreclosure. It has nothing to do with Free Radio Santa Cruz as such. I don't believe the feds were involved, but you never know. At any rate, the people who can listen to me now, it's like, right this moment, call your friends, okay? Call everyone that you think that would be interested in this, anyone that you have a phone number for, and tell them I'm on the air until 1 o'clock this afternoon. Right now, do it. Just go and call your friends. Tell them to tune their computer to freakradio.org and click on that lovely reddish pink oval atop the radio tower. And then after the show, do what you can until next month. Well, it's since we still have a almost full schedule of programs, immediately after the program, do what you can to remind people that we are still broadcasting via the internet. Certainly by next, by 3 p.m. next Monday on Labor Day, I'll be here in 2 days to do the other version of Mideast Madness show. So as far as I'm concerned, just as a matter of personal preference or whatever, tell everyone that Mideast Madness will be back on Labor Day, September 2nd at 3 p.m. I'm totally serious. I mean, obviously, you know, we know that we're going to be back transmitting as a normal radio service would. My concern, and I'm sure the concern of other forward-thinking collective members, is that it's not going to make a whole lot of difference if people have to completely rediscover Free Radio Santa Cruz. So, build up the case for us. Talk it up. Please tell your friends. Okay? Okay. That's a good little listener. I am the Palestinian American voice behind the Mideast Madness show. And construe from that what you will. Here is a statement from the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee sent to me yesterday. I received this yesterday. Statement from the ADC. Please do not confuse these people with the ADL. ADC is not the Anti-Defamation League. Anti-Defamation League is a Jewish-based and largely Jewish-staffed site, which was created, as they stated, to combat anti-Semitism and perhaps to promote Israel. I think the ADL has changed their direction slightly, becoming an ardently pro-Israel organization. The ADL has their business. The ADC, American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, has theirs. And here is a statement from the ADC dated yesterday. Incidentally, the editor declares over 3 decades of advocacy and achievement for Arab Americans. Washington, D.C., www.adc.org, adc.org. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee calls on the Obama administration to exercise restraint and not use military action against Syria, the country of Syria. As a civil and human rights organization, ADC condemns the use of chemical weapons by any entity and agrees that such acts must not be tolerated and must be dealt with accordingly. ADC recognizes the authority and the responsibility of the United Nations Security Council to deal with this violation of international law. ADC calls on all nations, including the United States, to encourage the Security Council to address this illegal and immoral act, pulling the United States into another needless, purposeless, and costly war is not in the best interest of the country or the region. As the conflict in Syria continues, the death toll rises, ADC continues its call for a peaceful, negotiated resolution which will allow for a transition to a unified, secular, and democratic Syria. This is the ADC talking now, an American human and civil rights organization. Continuing, this transition must be achieved by respecting the principle of self-determination and must be free of foreign intervention. ADC supports those working for a peaceful transition of the Arab world to a secular and democratic system respecting the human rights, freedom of religion, and dignity for all. The popular uprisings in a number of Arab countries signify a historic quest for peoples living in these countries to secure protections for their civil rights and civil liberties, and to establish true democracy and the rule of law in their political and legal infrastructures. ADC believes in the futility of the resort to violence to achieve these objectives and condemns all efforts leading to sectarian or ethnic incitement and civil strife in any Arab country. This shift in Arab domestic politics will inevitably impact U.S. foreign policy in the relationship between these countries and the United States. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee recognizes the current conflict in Syria has given rise to a serious humanitarian crisis, which has led to hundreds of thousands of refugees. ADC calls on all peoples to ensure that those in immediate need are provided with adequate resources and aid. ADC will continue to work to ensure that Syrian nationals are given the opportunity to come to the United States and seek refuge from the crisis, and those currently in the United States are provided with temporary protective status, TPS. ADC will continue to address the humanitarian needs of all people and work with partner non-governmental organizations and government agencies to address the crisis. End of ADC statement. I felt a certain obligation to pass this statement along to people. I have been on the mailing list of the ADC for some years now. I admit that I am not a paying member of the organization. It is simply not a part of my budget at this time. However, naturally, I exercise moral support of the ADC and do things like read some of their dispatches. I even have a cousin who is half Palestinian himself, a Harvard graduate attorney who, let's see, I think he's back in the Bay Area now, but was working in Washington, D.C., and has loaned out some of his time and energy to the ADC's, one of the ADC's legal divisions, volunteering there. So, as Palestinian Americans, our family does have a hand in some of this stuff. However, my friends, I will admit, in all my naivete on these worldly matters, I am not in agreement to the very letter of this ADC statement. I certainly support many pacifist causes. I commune with a number of pacifist colleagues. But I do think there are times on a very large scale where the enforcement of human rights and civil rights and what you'll hear these days as conventional norms around the world, the rule of law, whether it's the United Nations dispensing it or a Geneva Convention or some other such conglomeration, I think it might be necessary for someone, it looks like it's going to be America, to launch some kind of physical military attack. I am going to be stupid enough to say I hope it's a very successful and very, very accurate fine-tuned surgical strike that keeps collateral damage to a minimum. Of course, collateral damage is an old term meaning civilian fatalities and casualties. But the United States is certainly in a position to do something about what the Syrians are doing. This truly would be a case of sparing other sectors of Syrian society from future gas attacks, chemical attacks, and annihilation. I happen to believe, in concert with President Obama on this one. The U.S., if nobody else, should do something militarily. If any of my Resource Center for Nonviolence friends are listening, they're probably shaking their heads, saying, "You didn't read Code Pink statement." Well, I was looking for Code Pink statement, but I couldn't find it before the show. I got to figure out where I put that. So that's what that is. Again, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 11:19 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, here on the west coast of North America. And this is the Mideast Madness Show. My name is Ren, R-E-N. Here's something a lot more positive. Although the way it starts out, it might not sound very terribly positive. As you longtime listeners will know, and I've been doing this show for 14 months, and I just started the Saturday version a couple of months ago. And when I say version, I mean what will normally be a live show. Two separate live shows, Monday at 3 p.m. and Saturday 11 a.m. One is not necessarily a recorded refeed of another. I try to do two live shows for a total of almost 4 hours a week. Okay, so those who have been listening to me will know that I am a founding participant in the Free Gaza Movement. 5 years ago, I and some 43 other activists and largely Greek crew members sailed out of the port of Larnaca, Cyprus, into the port of Gaza City in the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip is a small hunk of land, some 35 miles long, averaging 5 miles wide, geographically isolated from the West Bank. There is no land bridge, but there are Palestinians, native indigenous Palestinians living in the West Bank, and native indigenous Palestinians living in the Gaza Strip. The Gaza Strip currently has about 1.7 million populations of peoples. It is, by some measurement, the most crowded piece of land anywhere on Earth, and has often been referred to as an open-air prison. Because even though in 2005, Israel undid and dismantled its illegal Jewish settlements in the Gaza Strip, which were in part put there to begin with to mess with the Palestinians, intimidate them, and possibly force them to consider leaving. So they can have all of that and include it in the greater Israel, a greater Eretz Israel, or land of Israel. Ariel Sharon, that so-and-so, who was prime minister at the time, decided he was either prime minister then or was a minister of something or other, minister of defense or whatever he was. He came up with the idea that, hey, let's concentrate on the West Bank and on massively expanding our illegal Zionist Israeli settlements in the West Bank and make it look to the world like we're doing the Palestinians a favor by leaving the tiny Gaza Strip. In other words, Sharon decided that settlement activity, the Jewish settlement activity of Israel in the Gaza Strip, was expendable and not worth trying to preserve as the world continues to hem and haw at Israel's war crimes there. So even though the Jews left Gaza in 2005, they continue, as they have since, at least since the June War of 1967, to have a very heavy military presence this time, and for the most part, not exclusively, for the most part, on the Israeli side of their border with Gaza, with the Gaza Strip, although they do enter whenever they feel like it to harass and shoot and kill and wound Palestinians, including unarmed women and children and unarmed men and old men. They do this. It just simply never hits the mainstream press in the United States, but they do it continuously. And this IDF, so-called Israeli Defense Forces, as they like to call them, maintains troop presence at the border crossings and is very restrictive about who can get in and out in terms of the Gazan population, the Palestinian people. They decide who goes out and who comes in. Going out often having a lot to do with the need for medical attention in the better and better equipped and staffed Israeli hospitals. A lot of time the Israelis just won't let them go. And a great deal of the time they don't even explain why. Supposedly the IDF is there to protect the Israeli people from harm. And all they're really doing in the process is making life unbearable for Palestinians who are crowded into this proverbial open-air prison of 1.7 million people. And in many cases, Palestinians who are fortunate enough to leave the Gaza Strip for whatever reason, be it medical, family visitation, business, or educational, whatever, in most of those cases, almost all of those cases, Israel refuses to let them return. Okay, so that's the situation in Gaza. Here is a dispatch from my friend and fellow Free Radio Santa Cruz radio host, Donna Wallach. From yesterday. Greetings all. This is a good report. However, let's be very clear. Gaza has been under brutal and illegal Israeli occupation since 1967, meaning that Gaza has been under some form of blockade / siege / collective punishment since 1967. The apartheid Israeli government has prevented the economic development of Gaza since 67. It was very easy for them to isolate Gaza, which they were unable to do in the West Bank until they started building the apartheid wall there. Now the West Bank and East Jerusalem are also under siege, blockade, collective punishment. Totally illegal under international law and just wrong. Still here, folks. Hang in there. From 2006, a number of international solidarity activists worked together to organize the Free Gaza Movement, and in 2008, there were 5 successful boat trips from the island nation of Cyprus, way over there in the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea, challenging the illegal Israeli siege, blockade, collective punishment on Gaza and the 1.5 million Palestinians living there. Please be very clear. The Free Gaza Movement boat trips were to break the illegal Israeli siege blockade on Gaza and the Palestinian people. The goal or the aim was not to bring aid. We put infinitesimal amounts of aid on the boats as a symbolic clue. And Ren is going to break in here as a member of that contingent of humanitarians, of human rights activists. 5 years ago, the trips that I were on had next to nothing in terms of physical aid to the Gazan Palestinians there, although subsequent voyages did begin to bring more and more useful stuff. Initially, it was primarily medical goods and possibly spare parts for the hospitals that are always overstretched in Gaza. Things like they need spare parts. 5 years ago when I was visiting Shifa Hospital there, they had, I think, a total of two or three kidney dialysis machines that were in working order and therefore used to the hilt, being heavily taxed. They have other machines, but they need spare parts. The Free Gaza movement evolved and developed to the point where we began bringing more practical items so the Gazans can continue to rebuild their lives. Since 1967. Okay, back to the article. We put infinitesimal amounts of aid on the boats as a symbolic clue, says Donna. The Palestinians are absolutely capable and able to take care of themselves. They don't want aid. They want to have open borders to travel, visit, attend university, trade, and make commerce with other countries, like they did for thousands of years prior to the illegal occupation since 1967, and for the rest of historic Palestine since 1947. Donna says, I lived in Gaza for 4 months in 2008 and witnessed for myself the high unemployment rate, the restrictions of movement, the denial of access to an education and medical care, preventing farmers from farming their own land so that they can have a livelihood and produce food for the Palestinians in Gaza and export organically grown produce, preventing Palestinian fishermen from fishing in their internationally recognized waters, denying them the right to have a livelihood and provide a good, healthy food for the Palestinians living in Gaza. Gaza is the largest open-air, maximum security prison in the world. Palestinians living in Gaza can't even get letters from outside Gaza. They can't have people come and visit, not even their own family members. Although I will add, that is an absolute statement, which understandably is not always entirely true. Some material, and even mail, does manage to get in and out of there. People do manage to get in and out of there, but this is a rarity in Gaza. Returning to Donna's dispatch. Again, I'm reading from an email from my friend Donna Wallach, entitled, Gaza's Own Ark, A-R-K, will export Palestinian goods. Let's finish this. This is actually a preface to the main article. The only thing that the Israeli government can't control is breathing. Every other aspect of Palestinian life in Gaza, East Jerusalem, and West Bank is under Israeli control. This highlights even more the importance of Gaza's Ark, a boat purchased in Gaza from a Palestinian fisherman in Gaza. All the work on the boat is being done by Palestinians living in Gaza and supervised by Palestinians. The boat, clump. The boat will be loaded with goods made in Gaza by Palestinians. The boat, Gaza's Ark, will leave Gaza City port with Palestinian crew and some internationals with the clear intent to establish sea trade with another country in the Mediterranean. Please do all in your ability to support and promote Gaza's Ark. In solidarity, Donna Wallach. Okay, now we're getting into the meat of it. This is from Sarah Mariasek. Gaza's own Ark will export Palestinian goods. And this, by the way, is through a small news agency or news clearinghouse, whatever, called Huria, the Arabic word for freedom, Huria. Gaza's own Ark will export Palestinian goods. Dr. Sarah Marusek, the Middle East Monitor, Friday, 30 August 2013. In 2007, Israel strengthened its occupation of Palestine by placing the Gaza Strip under a siege, restricting the movement of people and goods in and out of the enclave. By denying the population in Gaza direct access to the world by sea or air, the only two entry and exit points remaining for Palestinians are the Erez crossing into Israel and the Rafah crossing into Egypt in the south end of the Strip. However, Israel only allows passage through Erez for, quote, exceptional humanitarian cases, with an emphasis on urgent medical cases. And while Israel does allow for some Israeli-made goods to enter Gaza through the Karim Abu Salem crossing, this trade forces the captive population in Gaza to finance its occupiers, Israel. Otherwise, the lives of more than 1.6 million people, it says here, 1.6 or 1.7, somewhere in there, million people are almost completely dependent upon the accessibility of Rafah, focusing all eyes upon the Egyptian border crossing at the expense of obscuring the occupation of Palestine. Israel's blockade is clearly against international law, because under the Fourth Geneva Convention, any occupying power is required to protect civilians under its control, whereas under the siege, Palestinians are being denied, in quotes here, adequate amount of the most basic food and medical supplies, not to mention a host of other supplies necessary for rebuilding, and the quotation ends, the infrastructure that Israel targeted and destroyed in 2009 and 2012, according to the Institute for Middle East Understanding. A June 2012 report on the blockade's social and economic impacts by the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs found the following. Let's see who's giving us a call here. Hello, you're on, this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hang on. So, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the wrong slide up there. Hi, who's this?
Oh, this is a fan of Free Radio. What time is your show?
Which show were you looking for?
Can you ask what start today at 1?
Yeah, normally it starts at 1. But, you know, you never know. I never know when the next person is going to be in here. So I'm always, all of us in the collective really are putting on a recorded show in case the person doesn't appear. So it may be recorded or it may be live. But yes, Kanyunasos program starts at 1.
Yeah, it's today, Saturday, right?
This is Saturday, see.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, sir.
Sure. another unsurprising, anticlimactic phone call. Since I'm the only person here, we do not have off-air staff to answer the phones. So, obviously, there's no screening whatsoever. I do hope you can forgive us. Forgive me for that. Such is the way of free radio in the United States. I'm sure it's even worse in other countries and better in other places. Back to work, folks. This is the Mideast Madness Show on Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live at freakradio.org. Where was I? We can get this thing to... I'm trying to talk this damn PC monitor back so I can read it. Like it's rusted. Okay. Get it together, Ren. Oh, you stopped doing that? That's amazing. I'm playing with the computer here. Discovering and learning as I go along. I'll just start this paragraph again. A June 2012 report on the blockade social and economic impacts by the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs found the following: 34% of Gaza's workforce, including over half its youth, is unemployed. 44% of Palestinians in Gaza are food insecure. About 80%, 4 out of 5 Palestinians in Gaza are aid recipients. Gross domestic product, GDP, per capita decreased around 17% between 2005 and 2011. Severe fuel and electricity shortages result in regular outages of up to 12 hours a day. Electric power outages. 85% of schools in Gaza have run on double shifts to meet the population's educational needs. And in 2012, exports averaged around 7% of what they were in 2005. The report concludes that the blockade, and I quote from the report, is a denial of basic human rights and contravention of international law and amounts to collective punishment. End quote. Some UN officials have also called Gaza an open-air prison. Still on the dispatch, now on the article now. In 2008, international activists responded to the humanitarian crisis in Gaza by organizing what would become a series of land convoys and sea flotillas, the Free Gaza Movement, primarily directing the latter, the flotillas, to deliver goods and draw the world's attention to the plight of Palestinians under the siege. After Israeli security forces boarded the Mavi Marmara in international waters and killed 9 activists in the spring of 2010, restrictions were eased at both the Rafah and Karim Abu Salem, Karim Abu Salem in the north, and overall access to Rafah continued to improve after the Egyptian Revolution in 2011 and with the election of President Morsi. However, more recent events in Egypt illustrate the fragility of these gains. In other words, the flow of goods and people in and out through the Rafah crossing in the south has come under restriction again. It's tightened. Continuing here, according to the New York Times, during President Morsi's, quote, rule, an average of 40,000 5,000 people, my friends, crossed Rafah each month, up from about 28,000 per month and 15,000 per month in the 2 years prior. From 15,000 to 28,000 to 40,000. End quote. But since the coup that deposed President Morsi on 3rd July, the Israeli nonprofit Gisha, a group that works to protect the freedom of movement of Palestinians, reports that traffic through Rafah has been cut by around 75%, as I was saying, as Ren was saying here, which means that movement is restricted more now than it was under the Mubarak regime. Gisha, the Israeli group, also reports that all tunnel activity was halted last Friday, which means no goods were able to cross into Gaza until the partial reopening of Rafah earlier this week. As a result, diesel fuel and gasoline were in short supply, with long lines reported at gas stations throughout Gaza. And just checking some factual statistics here. Okay. And we're on the last paragraph here now. The precarious situation in Egypt should serve to refocus our attention on ending the occupation in Gaza and all of Palestine, rather than trying to manage it. And an international project called Gaza's Ark hopes to do just that. The idea is simple. Gaza's Ark purchased a vessel. This is the organization called Gaza's Ark, purchased a vessel that is being refurbished by Palestinian workers in the port of Gaza. And when it is ready, it will then be used to export Palestinian-made goods from the West Bank and Jerusalem, in addition to the Gaza Strip, with the help of the international community, thus challenging, quote, the blockade from the inside out, end quote. See more at MiddleEastMonitor.com/articles/activism/7149-hyphenated throughout. Gaza's own Ark will export Palestinian goods. Just go to MiddleEastMonitor.com, articles, activism, check out Gaza's Ark. Again, presented to us by Dr. Sarah Marusek, social science PhD, the Maxwell School of Syracuse University. I'm guessing that's the Syracuse that's in the state of New York. Yeah, there's another website here you might want to check out. amiddleeastblog.wordpress.com/. I don't know why they have that final slash after so many of these links and websites. I'm sure it indicates something. All right, Ren to Wheels comments here. As a fellow human being who has visited the Gaza Strip once, and that was 5 years ago, which was 2008, was 3 years after the vacation of the Israeli settlements in the Gaza Strip, the emptying of them and abandonment of them, and 2 years after the election of the Hamas government by the Gazans there, in a popular, well-observed, internationally observed election. For one thing, I find it very heartening. Well, I find the whole project enheartening for me. But in particular, the Port of Gaza City is, I believe, the only port to speak of in the 35-mile-long coastal region. They have a breakwater, and they also have, I will never forget, strewn around the perimeters of the shore in the marina, if you want to call it a marina, are these abandoned decaying and rusting hulks of boats that clearly have been there for decades. I express a degree of alarm at learning that it is one of these boats that is being refurbished and renamed Gaza's Ark in spite of the ballyhoo in celebration of the project. I keep hoping and praying that they will not spring leaks. And, of course, they may have, you know, not all. As I said, the boats were in varying degrees of disrepair. Maybe they found one that was hidden or partially hidden from my view, that was in relatively stronger shape. But I still worry. Very decrepit. Sorry, scenario there in the harbor, in the marina, in the port of Gaza City. Now, I want to comment in addition to the interruptions that I gave in the course of reading this. Certainly good to know that there are a lot of Israeli and Israeli-sponsored organizations that are pro-justice, pro-peace, and ultimately pro-people, pro-Palestinian and pro-Israeli, or Israeli organizations who realize that the current Israeli governments and Israeli military administration of the West Bank, etc., are often taking exactly the opposite course that they should be taking in order to secure the citizens of Israel and the Palestinian citizens of a non-state, as it is right now. It's good to know that we have groups like Gisha that I read about. Now, I'm sure, as I stated, there is practically no one who's listening to the show live, as far as I can tell, through the Shoutcast program that we have here. But if you're listening to the rerun of this program, which you can find, assuming the recording is successful and I end up downloading it to my archival website successfully, the archive of Mideast Madness shows, both Mondays and Saturdays, most of them anyway, appears at radioforall.net. Go to radio and then type in the number 4, the character 4, ALL.NET, radioforall.net. Just type in Mideast Madness there and go by either title or date, or approximate date, and you'll hear this show. So, some unknown people may soon be listening to this, to a repeat of this show, as it were, from the archives, or you may be hearing this as a refeed in the course of the next few weeks here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm sure some of you will be saying to yourselves, what about those missiles? What about those damn missiles that the Arabs keep shooting from Gaza into Israel? There's no denying, I won't try to deny, that those who are the ones firing these missiles and mortars are committing a crime against humanity, just as Israel's activities of restrainment, siege, harassment, shooting, bombing, wounding, and killing Palestinians, often quite arbitrarily, according to my sources, are also war crimes, crimes against humanity. The missiles accomplish nothing, even from a military or, in the military vernacular, productive sense. The missiles cause minimal damage to Israeli infrastructure, and in the past few years have killed a total of no more than 20 Israelis. The killing of any one person, Israeli, Palestinian, or whoever, is reprehensible, as we all know. But we're comparing 20 lives to the incredible onslaught, which all proper authorities in the world consider to be, most of the proper authorities in the world, consider the Israeli retaliation to be wholly, many, many times disproportionate to the damage done by militant Gazan rockets and mortars, way out of proportion. And 5 years ago, at the end of 2008, in Israel's Operation Cast Lead, which was precipitated by the leaders of the Israeli government, the Israeli ultra-right, Likud party there. They were precipitated by the anticipation of the elections going on in Israel. These guys wanted to stay in office, so they annihilated a couple of thousand Gazans with white phosphorus and other weapons. White phosphorus is sort of the contemporary version of napalm, made infamous in Vietnam, which lathers the skin, the clothing, and then the skin of civilians and soldiers with a jellied form of gasoline. They're liable to catch fire to their whole bodies. Or, even if that doesn't happen, even if the fire doesn't occur, napalm causes searing pain and wounds that never heal, often over 100% of the victim's body. Cast Lead uses the white phosphorus compound, which acts very similarly to anyone it comes into contact with. They also used white phosphorus in the November 2012 war. The Israelis did. Anytime you have a disproportionate attack like that against a civilian population, that most obviously and automatically constitutes a form of collective punishment. Let's kill the people who are considered the enemies of Israel en masse, many times over than what we've suffered, in order to please the Israeli electorate and get ourselves reelected again. The worst kind of collective punishment. Okay, that's pretty much my opinion on the Gaza's Ark project and the soon-to-be-completed, hopefully, Gaza's Ark boat. The boat will be named Gaza's Ark, it says here. Oh, the other thing I was going to say is Gazan fishermen have for like forever fished. Gazans have are fishermen, many of them, on the coast there, and they have subsisted for forever, for a very long time, on their catches. Not only subsist in terms of consuming it, but in terms of selling and trading it and having something of an economy. These are these fishing boats are the boats that are in better condition going in and out of the port there, the port of Gaza City, and yes, Israel does shoot at them. Israel exercises these ridiculous, impinging, and deliberately intimidating limitations on how far out from shore the fishermen may go for their catches. The Israeli Navy and the government knows perfectly well that the best catches and the best opportunity for the fishermen to maintain their economy and their way of life are in schools of fish that exist much, much farther out than the Israelis are letting them go. Hence, the Israelis are trying to starve them, or at least restrict the fishermen's activity and subsequently the Palestinians' economy to the point of disheartening them and squeezing them. And it was one of the WikiLeaks reports, according to Julian Assange and his activity, that come out of Israel, as there is a lot of collusion between Israeli military activity and U.S. intelligence. WikiLeaks has revealed that what Israel is doing in terms of their impingement on the lives of the Gazan Palestinians not only is deliberate, but there is an infamous, now well-known infamous statement that came out of Israeli intelligence circles. We're going to put them on a diet, quote unquote. The Israelis have said, at least to one another, and it was leaked that they said this, that we're going to put the Palestinians in Gaza on a diet. And just more collective punishment and Zionist asininity and mischief. So that's what that's about. Okay. Don't forget, go to a Middle East blog at wordpress.com. Go to MiddleEastMonitor.com. Check out the Gaza's Ark materials that they have. It's 12 noon, folks. 1,200 hours PDT on the west coast of California, Santa Cruz County. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. Currently not on the air in the traditional manner. In other words, we're not transmitting via radio waves unless it's an intrinsic part of the internet process, wherever you live or where we work from. Not on the radio band at the moment. We expect to be back before too long, sometime after Labor Day, when the world returns more or less to normal. Like Woody Allen said in one of his movies, why do all the psychiatrists in town have to take vacations in August? Everyone in the city goes crazy until Labor Day. Tee-hee-hee. He's smart, and he's Jewish, too. Anyway, not that that has anything to do with anything, but yeah. When the world returns more or less to normal and everyone is back in town, we're going to get that sucker up and transmitting, as usual. If you have any ideas or offers of land, help, creative ideas, etc., please do not hesitate to call me at area code 831-427-3772. That's line one. Line two is 4693119. Call me for any reason. Call me because I'm lonely here. I am alone in the studio, so there's no screening of calls. And feel free to call at any point, even if we're in the middle of music or in the middle of a reading or even if I'm in the middle of another call. Don't hesitate to call me. The few folks who are out there listening, don't forget to get the word out about Free Radio Santa Cruz. We inherently need listeners to keep the service strong. And don't forget to send your donations to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Check your money order, please, to maintain this wonderful service. Highly imperfect, but still potentially fabulous service. Just write on the envelope, FRSC. P.O. Box 7811, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Here's some Latvian bagpipe music for your relaxation and to get away from my monotonous voice here for a few minutes.
Thank you.
by the way, is from the album entitled The Bagpipes of Latvia. Where is Latvia? It's on the Baltic Sea, not the word Baltic, not to be confused with Balkan, which is farther south on the other end of Eastern Europe. Latvia is situated, I believe, between Lithuania and Estonia on the Baltic Sea. Small countries. The Bagpipes of Latvia. 2001. ARC Music, ARC Music Productions International Limited, product of United Kingdom. Manufactured in Austria. Yeah, it's from the south to the north, according to the map here. Lithuania, then Latvia, whose capital is Riga, then Estonia, and then somewhere farther north is Finland and Karelia. Neat stuff, folks. I'm a bit of a folk music and folk lore aficionado myself. So I get excited about opportunities to talk about that stuff. Now I'm going to talk to you on this weekend version of the Mideast Madness Show, coming to you every Saturday at 11 a.m. I want to talk about the Kairos Palestine document. Join me as together we shall read what for me is the first in-depth description of the Kairos Palestine. This is from Wikipedia, the free encyclopedia. Kairos Palestine, that's Kairos spelled with a K, K-A-I-R-O-S. You'd think that would be pronounced Kairos, as in Cairo, Egypt, but that's no. Let's just get into it. Kairos Palestine is an organization primarily known for its issuance in Bethlehem in December 2009 of, quote, a moment of truth, otherwise known as the Kairos Palestine document, a call to Christians around the world to help fight the Israeli occupation. The chief activity of the group, whose members are Christians living in Israel and in the occupied territories, is the promotion of this document. So Kairos Palestine, the organization, has, as what it considers to be its main duty, of promotion of the Kairos document. The document's full title is A Moment of Truth, A Word of Faith, Hope, and Love from the Heart of Palestinian Suffering. Kairos is the Greek word for an opportune or decisive moment. In discussing the Kairos Palestine document, the drafting of which he oversaw, Kairos Palestine coordinator Rafit Kassis explained that its production took about a year and a half because of a difference of opinions. He further said that, quote, more than 3,000 Palestinian Christian figures have signed and adopted it, end quote. The document is available in Arabic and several European languages at the website www.kairospalestine.ps. PS is your internet gateway to Palestine. Kassis, that's Kairos Palestine coordinator Rafit Kassis, in a January 2012 article, described Palestine Kairos as tackling the issue of, and he quotes here, Zionist hijacking of religious messages and of the Bible itself, all for the purpose of excluding other peoples and cultures from the land and their rights, end quote. Again, these are Palestinian Arab Christians talking here. Continuing, the Kairos Palestine document is largely modeled on a text released on September 25, 1985, in Johannesburg, South Africa, that called on Christians to oppose apartheid. That document was entitled Challenge to the Church, a Theological Comment on the Political Crisis in South Africa, the Kairos Document, 1985. Here's a little more about the Kairos Palestine document. The document contains the following explanation of its objectives. Quote, as Palestinian Christians, we hope that this document will provide the turning point to focus the efforts of all peace-loving peoples in the world, especially our Christian sisters and brothers. We also hope that it will be welcomed positively and will receive strong support. Dot, dot, dot. We believe that liberation from occupation is in the interest of all peoples in the region because the problem is not just a political one, but one in which human beings are destroyed. End of quotation. The document's drafters describe it as the Christian Palestinians' word to the world about what is happening in Palestine. They express a desire to see the glory of the grace of God in this land and in the sufferings of its people, and add that in this spirit they are calling on the international community to stand by the Palestinian people who have faced oppression, displacement, suffering, and clear apartheid for more than six decades, which coincides entirely with the existence of the modern state of Israel. I added that. Now continuing with Wikipedia here. They call the document, quote, a cry of hope with love, prayer, and faith in God, end quote, and say that it is addressed first of all to ourselves and then to all the churches and Christians in the world, asking them to stand against injustice and apartheid, urging them to work for a just peace in our region, calling on them to revisit theologies that justify crimes perpetrated against our people and the dispossession of the land. End quotation. The document declares that the occupation is a, and I quote, sin against God, and that any theology that tolerates it cannot be Christian, quote, because true Christian theology is a theology of love and solidarity with the oppressed, a call to justice and equality among peoples. It calls on all peoples to put pressure on Israel to put an end to its oppression and disregard for international law. It also describes nonviolent resistance as a, quote, duty for all Palestinians, including Christians. And it charges Israel with having launched a cruel war against Gaza in December 2008 and January 2009, with ravaging Palestinian land, and I quote here, in the name of God and in the name of force, with separating family members, thus making family life impossible for thousands of Palestinians, especially where one of the spouses does not have an Israeli identity card. I'll break in here. This last clause here, especially where one of the spouses does not have an Israeli identity card. This is an attempt to address the kind of discriminatory laws that Israel puts on members of mixed marriages. Okay, continuing. With restricting religious liberty for Christians and Muslims, with lack of consideration for refugees and prisoners, with turning Jerusalem, city of reconciliation, into a city of discrimination and exclusion, a source of struggle rather than peace, and with holding international law and international resolutions in contempt. The document argues that an end to occupation is a precondition for an end to Palestinian resistance, not the other way around. I'll read that again so you all understand. The document argues that an end to occupation is a precondition for an end to Palestinian resistance, not the other way around. Quote, If there were no occupation, there would be no resistance, no fear, and no insecurity, end quote. If Israelis end the occupation, quote, they will see a new world in which there is no fear, no threat, but rather security, justice, and peace, end quote. The document further rejects biblical arguments for Zionism as a perversion of, and I quote, the love of God and his providence in the life of both peoples and individuals. It calls Palestinians' connectedness to this land a natural right, not just an ideological or a theological question, but a matter of life and death. It describes the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land as, and I quote, a sin against God and humanity that distorts the image of God. And it declares that any theology seemingly based on the Bible or on faith or on history that legitimizes the occupation is far from Christian teachings because it calls for violence and holy war in the name of God Almighty, subordinating God to temporary human interests and distorting the divine image to the human beings living under both political and theological injustice, and on and on and on. No, I'm not going to read the entire entry for Kairos Palestine from WikiLeaks, but I have coddled a copy of it for myself here. Okay, now I wanted to describe Kairos Palestine, the group, the project, and what it encompasses, so you can understand the next article or two, both of which came out recently. And, whoopsie, let's go to, back to my stuff here. Oh. Oh, come on, folks. Let's, slow computer. Okay. Here, this one is dated August 27, just 3 days ago. Ah, slow. This is tortuous to me. Or it just doesn't go where I want it to go. From my friend Daryl, my colleague Daryl, Christian pastor Daryl, if that's important to say, from uruknet.info, uruknet.info. Oh, I have to go by way of Facebook to access this one. uruknet.info, information from the Middle East. Kairos Palestine, the organization, denounces attempts to recruit Christians by Saeed Banura, August 9. The Palestinian Christian Initiative, Kairos Palestine, issued a statement strongly denouncing the Israel's attempts to recruit Arab Palestinian Christians in historic Palestine to the Israeli military that occupies their people. The statement came in response to the Israeli decision to form a joint committee of Palestinian Christians and the Israeli government of Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, leader of Likud, with the aim to encourage an act on this is not written well, or perhaps it's just not translated very well from the Arabic. And it is clearly a translation from the Arabic. Let's start that sentence again. The statement came in response to the Israeli decision to form a joint committee of Palestinian Christians and the Israeli government of Benjamin Netanyahu with the aim to encourage an act on recruiting young Arab Christians in the Israeli army. Cairo stated that the officials who are encouraging enlistments in the occupation army are conducting provocative actions that harm Christian churches, national interests, and the Christians themselves. And when they say Christian, or I'm sorry, when they say national interest, I presume they're talking about the nation of Israel. Continuing along here. Those who call for recruiting Christians to the occupation army do not represent us, do not represent our churches, and do not represent the Christians, Cairo said. It seems that some of those who have been deceived chose a wrong path that does not serve our interest and faith as Arab Christians, end quote. It added that trying to recruit the Christians is immoral and harms the Christian-Palestinian identity to the Holy Land. We need to be united. We need to protect our national identity. Only our Arab-Palestinian identity will be able to protect us and protect our interests, Kairos said, and went on to say, our choice will not be sectarian, but will only be national unity between all Palestinians, regardless of their beliefs and faith. The statement came after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu ordered the formation of a committee to recruit Arab-Palestinian Christians in the country to the Israeli military. The decision was made after Netanyahu held a meeting on Monday with Father Jubrael Nadav, known for his stances encouraging enlistment in the Israeli military, despite massive objections from Palestinian Christian community in the country. When Kairos Palestine was established in December of 2009, it published its mission statement calling for people, justice, and equality, expressed its rejection to the Israeli occupation, all sorts of apartheid in the world, and called for justice and equality. Now, this next latter half of this article is italicized. Let's find out why it's italicized. This document, Kairos, is the Christian Palestinians' word to the world about what is happening in Palestine. It is written at this time when we wanted to see the glory of the grace of God in this land and in the sufferings of its people. Weird sentence there. In this spirit, the document requests the international community to stand by the Palestinian people who have faced oppression, displacement, suffering, and clear apartheid for more than six decades. The suffering continues while the international community silently looks on at the occupying state Israel. Our word is a cry of hope with love, prayer, and faith in God. Obviously, this is this is from a document that Wikipedia resourced when they wrote their blurb on the subject. Continuing anyway. We address it first of all, to ourselves and then to all the churches and Christians in the world, asking them to stand against injustice and apartheid, urging them to work for a just peace in our region, calling on them to revisit theologies that justify crimes perpetrated against our people and the dispossession of the land. In this historic document, we Palestinian Christians declare that the military occupation of our land is a sin against God and humanity, and that any theology that legitimizes the occupation is far from Christian teachings, because true Christian theology is a theology of love and solidarity with the oppressed, a call to justice and equality among peoples. This document did not come about spontaneously, and it is not the result of a coincidence. It is not a theoretical or theological study or a policy paper, but is rather a document of faith and work. Its importance stems from the sincere expression of the concerns of the people and their view of this moment in history we are living through. It seeks to be prophetic in addressing things as they are without equivocation and with boldness. In addition, it puts forward ending the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land and all forms of discrimination as the solution that will lead to a just and lasting peace. The document also demands that all peoples, political leaders, and decision makers put pressure on Israel and take legal measures in order to oblige its government to put an end to its oppression and disregard for the international law. The document also holds a clear position that nonviolent resistance to this injustice is a right and duty for all Palestinians, including Christians. I'll read it again. This document also holds a clear position that nonviolent resistance to this injustice is a right and duty for all Palestinians, including Christian Palestinians, such as my father, who's a born and raised Jerusalemite from old Palestine. I grew up as a Christian. He brought us up in the Lutheran tradition in the United States. Continuing, finishing up this statement here, the initiators of this document have been working on it for more than a year in prayer and discussion, guided by their faith in God and their love for their people, accepting advice from many friends, Palestinians, Arabs, other Arabs, and those from the wider international community. We are grateful to our friends for their solidarity with us. KairosPalestine.ps. The section for the comments of our readers has been closed because of many out-of-topics type postings. Although they'll let you post your own comments into their Facebook page, facebook.com/Uruknet, U-R-U-K-N-E-T, Uruknet, facebook.com/Uruknet. Okay. A couple of things for me on this. On the one hand, very heavily laden with Christian sentiment, that's obvious. Perhaps to a slight fault, they keep addressing the crimes and misdeeds of the State of Israel against the occupied native Palestinians, whether they are Muslims or Christians or whatever, if anything, quote-unquote, with faith or without faith, faithful or agnostic. But it does so, as I said, perhaps to a fault, because it keeps talking about Christian values and the way Christians see things, and never mentioning, they don't mention the word Jew, Jews, or Jewish, or Judaism anywhere in either of the two things that I've read to you, which, on the one hand, may be a wise thing to do, as they don't want to create a bridge between those of the Jewish faith and the illicit actions of the Israeli nation. That's understandable to a point. On the other hand, the emphasis on Christian values may, to say a Jewish person reading this, deny the value of Jewish beliefs and perturb the Jewish reader or someone who has some familiarity with Judaism. So that's one problem that I have with this. It's really, really super applying the Christian tradition. But another thing along those lines is that they go to great lengths to emphasize their faith in God and the glory of God, and in that way deny that this is a policy paper, which I really consider it to be. It's a policy paper of this organization, clearly. At any rate, I still have high respect for the Kairos Palestine group and their document, and things such as this that come out of the movement or the organization. Whereas, some of you may be aware that there is one very high-profile Jewish and ardent Zionist pro-Israel professor at the University of California here in Santa Cruz, UCSC. She made an immediate response to the Kairos Palestine document when it came out 4 years ago and called it not only thoroughly anti-Semitic, which it clearly is not, with the possible exception of what I was saying about the document's lack of reference to the Jews as a peaceful people of faith. But that is really a stretch to dismiss the whole document and the movement as anti-Semitic. It's nonsense. This is a person, this particular professor at UCSC jumps on any opportunity to dismiss a valid criticism or statement about the negatives of Israel as anti-Semitic. Not only did she say that, but this professor at UCSC just came right out and said that the document calls for the destruction of Israel, which it clearly and absolutely, by my reading, does not. The thing is, there are so many people who love Israel and what Israel supposedly stands for that they are unduly militant in my eye and in my mind. Militant about opportunities to douse the flames of dissent and commentary that they do not agree with when it comes to criticizing Israel. And they also often jump on the anti-Semitism bandwagon, or the anti-anti-Semitism bandwagon, as it were, so they can give a wholesale condemnation to anyone connected with those criticisms as being Jew haters. Some of these, even Zionists who are Christian, Zionists who are not necessarily Jews themselves, are utterly militant about this kind of wholesale condemnation of the opposition and using the neat trick, very cheap, neat trick of calling us all anti-Semites because it makes us look that bad. I can't overemphasize the use of the term wholesale. It's a wholesale condemnation of those who have something to say about Israel and Palestinians and really needs to be said. Okay. Folks, it's 12:40, 20 minutes to 1 in the afternoon. This Saturday, the last day of August, 2013, this is the Mideast Madness Show weekend version. Part deux, as I like to call it. I'm so cultured and Frenchified. Not. Now, I was pretty sure I had something quite recently, something a second item to read, or third, depending on how you listen to my show here, regarding Kairos Palestine. I get a lot of that stuff from Daryl, which is quite understandable. I know what I'll do. I'll do a word search, or more accurately, a phrase search, amongst my own email here, and almost instantaneously come across another document. You may recall, I'm going to reread this to you again. It mentions in passing Kairos, Palestine. You may recall that I mentioned that I and six other of my colleagues from the Resource Center for Nonviolence and others around the Bay Area visited California Senator Barbara Boxer, her office in Oakland in the Bay Area, Oakland, California here, and in order to attempt to get Barbara Boxer, the senator, to withdraw her support for Senate Bill 462, whose formal name is the United States-Israel Strategic Partnership Act for 2013, or at least in particular to drop Section 9 of said bill, which is still in committee, hasn't been voted on yet by the full Senate. The main gripe we have being that the bill will allow Israel to join some 37 other countries in a kind of exclusive club in conjunction with the U.S. to waive the need for a visa when citizens of either country go to visit the other country. Americans can go into a participating nation's country without the need for a visa and vice versa. Citizens of that given country can come into the U.S. without a need for a visa. The thing that's wrong and unethical about Section 9 of the Senate bill is that it would permit Israel not only to join this club, but it waives reciprocity. In other words, specifically, it would allow Israel as the one nation of the 38, Israel would be the 38th nation, as the one and only nation to a loophole allowing Israel to drop the equity provision there. In other words, Israelis may come into the United States without a visa for whatever purposes. Tourism, business, espionage. Perhaps it's happened before, folks. Israelis have spied on the U.S. They still have agents here. That's documented fact. Section 9 would permit Israelis for whatever business they have to enter the U.S. visa-free, but it will allow Israeli border authorities, police, and the military, in cases where the IDF is involved, to continue to discriminate at their own whim and deny entry without a visa, or in many cases even with a visa, to Americans that they don't trust, that the red flag pops up against. In other words, Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, Palestinian Americans, anyone, whether they had the slightest drop of Arab blood or Muslim faith in them, or whatever faith, who may be in solidarity with the people of Palestine, the oppressed, occupied people of the West Bank and Gaza and East Jerusalem, perhaps even the Golan Heights of Syria, which Israel occupies, or as Israel would say, has liberated in their whitewashing habits, and openly discriminate and say, no, we're not letting you in. And it's clear to me, after examining this issue very closely, that Israel's real purpose in doing this, in exercising the discrimination, has next to nothing to do with the security of the Israeli citizen or the Israeli nation. It is to curb, if not completely eliminate, the presence of those who come to Israel or to the occupied territories and bear witness to the army's crimes there, the IDF's criminal activities, terrible discrimination, and intimidation and harassment of the population. Israel really wants, and they've been desperate for this as of late, to cut way down, if not cut down entirely, on those who witness the truth and bring it back to the United States. So we all here can get a clear picture of what's going on. So with that being their true agenda, the United States being part and parcel to this discrimination at the border, with the border authorities very often rejecting entry and putting these Americans back on the plane, back to America, and many, many times without a stated reason. We get that all the time from recent reports. And all of this kind of discrimination on the 50th anniversary of the Reverend Dr. King's speech in Washington, celebrating a half century of this expression of civil rights and freedom, the U.S. will encode into its own law, into American law, into United States legal writings, support of this terrible inequity and discrimination in Israel. Okay, I'm going to reread this piece to you because it really is a mind blower. Travelers to Israel, Palestine, take note. In Israel, nothing is private. Israelis will open your mail. Says here, Bob Ross posted in Friends of IPMN, PCUSA, that's the... what does it stand for again? It'll probably say at the very bottom. It's a Christian-oriented group in solidarity with the Palestinians. Bob Ross posted in Friends of IPMN PCUSA. That's right in front of me. IPMN, Israel-Palestine Mission Network. Bob Ross, August 15. I was in Jerusalem and other parts of the West Bank earlier this summer on a faculty development seminar run by the Palestinian American Research Center. Not wanting to bring through Israeli airport security, my notebooks of field notes, business cards and materials, much of which was from Kairos, Palestine, none other than, I sent a big package of all that stuff home. It took nearly 3 months, but today I finally got my package of stuff that I sent from Jerusalem. Almost everything was gone, including everything from Kairos, Palestine. But put in their place, get this, folks, but put in their place was a giant Hebrew-Russian Torah. Torah is one of the main scriptures of the of Judaism, of the Jewish faith, which I did not purchase or pack myself. I'm thinking of writing something about the distorted perception among Zionists that Judaism, represented here in this story by the Torah, is incompatible with Palestinian liberation, represented humbly and ever so minutely by my field notes and other materials, most of which were gone. A colleague of mine on the trip, Erica Lorraine Williams, had a similar experience, minus the free Torah, which she beautifully and brilliantly wrote about here. From the Feminist Wire, somebody confiscated my field notes, Reflections on Occupied Palestine, June 24, 2013, by guest contributor to the Feminist Wire, Erica Lorraine Williams. TheFeministWire.com. This May, I traveled to occupied Palestine to participate in a faculty development seminar that involved visiting universities in East Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Ramallah, Nablus, and Hebron. All of those cities, including East Jerusalem, under Israeli occupation and not part of Israel proper. Again, East Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Ramallah, the current de facto government of the Palestinian Authority, Nablus and Hebron. Yes, Hebron is in the West Bank. As an anthropologist who has spent a lot of time in Latin America, I was thrilled at the prospect of traveling to a region where I had no previous experience and limited prior knowledge. I felt the need to disconnect from the technology of my iPad, laptop, and iPhone. Perhaps I was being nostalgic for the old days of handwriting and snail mail, but there was something about writing in a journal that excited me. I wanted to go back to the basics. I arrived in Palestine with two thin, compact journals in my favorite color, unspecified, and immediately, that doesn't mean anything, I don't know what it means, in my favorite color, and immediately went into ethnographic, quote, field notes mode. I wrote down descriptions of everything I saw around me, information that I learned from the scholars and students, my impressions, and my feelings at the end of each long, packed day. I wrote in order to remember so that I would be able to share what I learned when I returned home. Before the trip, we were warned. We were warned about the intense security at Ben-Gurion International Airport. If we arrived with books or articles about Palestine, we could be held for questioning or even denied entry. Again, she's saying that according to what she had heard, to what Ms. Williams had heard, one could be denied entry into Israel simply for having on their persons books or articles about Palestine. Continuing, airport security could go through our computer files, emails, and social media accounts. A previous participant was detained and even strip searched by Israeli airport security just for having a brochure from a Palestinian university. In an attempt to avoid a similar outcome, on the last day of the program, we walked to the nearby post office in East Jerusalem to mail our quote-unquote contraband materials. I paid 70 shekels, about $35 U.S., to mail a bulky white envelope that contained my journals, business cards from Palestinian colleagues, brochures from Palestinian universities and civil society organizations, and CDs of Palestinian music, compact discs. I wrapped several layers of clear tape around the package, hoping that I could guarantee its security and impermeability. I think she should have known that it would have given it away to Israeli postal clerk says, quote-unquote, suspect. Anyway, going on. Other participants mailed boxes full of scholarly books, posters, and detailed maps of Israel-Palestine that showed the ever-encroaching presence of Jewish settlers on Palestinian lands. Upon returning to Atlanta, Georgia, I was a bit nervous that the package would be lost in the mail or confiscated. So here's, folks, here's someone who is already pre-warned and was even aware that this kind of thing could happen. So imagine my excitement a few weeks later when the package arrived. However, when I opened it, I discovered that my journal full of notes was missing. I felt devastated and violated. My words were quite literally stolen. There is something cruel and unusual about separating an anthropologist from her field notes. I couldn't believe that an agent of the Israeli government had actually taken the time to sift through all of my belongings and make a decision as to what I should be allowed to have. They even retaped the envelope to make it look exactly as it did when I handed it to the post office employee. What was so dangerous and threatening about my handwritten notes? I felt outraged, but I realized that this was nothing compared to what Palestinians experience every day. When I told my Palestinian friend what happened, she said, "So expected. They don't want anybody to know what is really going on here." Well, if I only have my memory to rely on instead of my notes, then so be it. The Israeli government may have been able to take away my notes, my physical notes, but they can't take away the stories I heard, the things I saw, and the connections I made with Palestinians. I repeatedly heard Palestinians describe how the Israeli occupation affects every aspect of their lives, where they can live, who they can marry, where they can work, where they can study, and more. The Israeli government has spent a lot of money, supported by United States taxpayers, to build up the ugly infrastructure of apartheid, the wall, barbed wire, checkpoints, settler roads and Palestinian roads, segregated, etc. We met a Palestinian woman in Bethlehem whose house faced the wall. Israeli security forces forbade her from going onto the roof of her house because it was higher than the wall. They would shoot her if she defied their order. I remember that every university that we visited had a plaque to commemorate the martyrs, students who had been killed by Israeli defense forces. They're doing such a great job of defending, aren't they? IDF. Okay. Continuing. Palestinians are severely restricted in their movements. If they live in the West Bank or Gaza, they are not allowed to travel to Jerusalem without permission from the Israeli state, nor are they allowed to use Ben-Gurion International Airport in Tel Aviv. I met a woman from Gaza at the Yabus Cultural Center in Jerusalem who had not seen her family in Gaza in over 10 years. When she applied for residency in Jerusalem for work, she basically gave up the right to ever go back to Gaza again. In order to have a family reunion, they had to meet in Egypt. William says here, I met a Palestinian woman professor who was engaged to a Palestinian-American filmmaker. Not only was her fiancé's request for residency in Ramallah denied by the Israeli government, but he was also ordered to leave Ramallah by the end of May. Meanwhile, people are coming from around the world to attend their June wedding. I spoke to a professor who commuted from Jenin to Al-Quds University. He generally woke up at 5 o'clock a.m. to give himself 2 hours to get through the checkpoints. Sometimes the Israeli soldiers at the checkpoint would make him pull his car over and wait for an hour for no reason. They didn't believe that he was an, quote, Arab PhD, end quote. Tears welled in his eyes and mine as he described how he and several members of his family had been in prison and his family home had been demolished. Yeah, I'm sorry, folks, we're halfway through this, which, by the way, was written by one Erica Lorraine Williams, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Sociology and Anthropology at Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia. Again, this could be found at thefeministwire.com, June 24th. Somebody confiscated my field notes, Reflections on Occupied Palestine. Guest contributor, Erica Lorraine Williams. I read the whole thing a week or two ago anyway. Hopefully that would be included in one of my successfully recorded and archived shows. This is Ren to Wheel, Mideast Madness weekend show for August 31, 2013. Thank you for listening at me. And just like that, the one telephone caller we had was in today was inquiring about Radio Canyon with DJ Canyonazos. Whether he shows up live here or not is next for the next 3 hours. It's 1:01 p.m. talk at you on Monday, 3 p.m. Midi's Madness ran out.